Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, May 18th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book. We're on page 4, the third paragraph that begins with, "We went to live with my wife's parents," ending with, "I became an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places." We'll be reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are Deb M., who will be reading the 12 steps, Alice A. will be reading the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are Barbara W., Mary B., and Tricia D. The share ID for Tuesday, May 17th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 18,967, 18967. This morning's Wednesday, May 18th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the share ID is 18,969, 18969. Our newcomer greeter for today is Lois P., and Betsy or Robin will be making the announcements. DOA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Deb M. to read the 12 steps, please. Good morning, Deb.
Hi, this is Deb M., compulsive overeater recovering in Baltimore. The 12 steps of OA. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Deb M. And Alice A., if you'd read the 12 traditions for us.
Thank you. This is Alice A., recovered compulsive eater in Alabama. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to share.
And thank you, Alice. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 4, the third paragraph that begins with, "We went to live with my wife's parents," ending in, "I became an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places." And we're reading and commenting on this one paragraph only this morning. So good morning, Barbara W., if you would get us started, please.
Good morning, everyone. Excuse me. We went to live with my wife's parents. I found a job, then lost it as the result of a brawl with a taxi driver. Mercifully, no one could guess that I was to have no real employment for 5 years, or hardly draw a sober breath. My wife began to work at a department store, coming home exhausted to find me drunk. I became an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places. Well, what I see immediately is Bill's once more, he's down as low as he can go and still function as a human being. The merry-go-round ride, he's doing it well. And unfortunately, this is, I know that he may not say it, but even though he was drunk so much, I'm sure he felt humiliated of not having his own place to live, and he had to live with his wife's parents. And I never had to deal with anything quite that extreme. But when I was divorced, I found myself, well, it's just me, and I just didn't pay attention to anybody around me. I isolated. And I don't know how isolated Bill was, but he sure isolated people to stay away from him, doing public things like a brawl and going over to the brokerage firms and and saying, "Hi guys, here I am," you know, and the odds are that he was probably drunk at the time too. So I could see myself, my weight did, I'm at a healthy body weight now, 2 years of abstinence. But I can look back and I've been in program a great deal, a long time. And I still remember about 25, 30 years ago being up, my weight was up to 250 pounds. And at the time I was only 5'5". And mercifully and gratefully, that didn't last. And I was able to not get quite as high, even though my disease still stayed active. But I can see how what an amazing woman, I have to say, this amazing woman Lois was. And, you know, she had to be a huge reason as to why he stayed with it and he was able to find a higher power, and the rest is history. So with that, I pass.
Thank you, Barbara W., for getting us started this morning. Okay, if you're just coming on the line, we're on page 4, the third paragraph. We went to live with my wife's parents, ending with, "I became an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places." We're reading and commenting on this one paragraph. And although we do value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So I'm ready to take some names. And if you want to say the state you're calling from, that would be good too. Okay, so go ahead, please.
Wendy B. in Arizona.
Sherry H.M. in Washington.
Janice K. in Oregon.
Sherry Z. in California.
Katie V.
Katie, was that V as in Victor?
Yes.
Okay. You guys are being so perfect this morning. Anyone else want to get in this lineup? I should say easy, because it's nice when you come in one at a time. That was
Larry
perfect.
G.
Okay. And Larry G. Okay. Okay. So that is a great lineup. So I have Wendy B., Sherry H.M., Janice K., Sherry Z., Katie V., and Larry G. Did I miss anybody? Okay, we're good to go. So go ahead, please, Wendy B. from Arizona.
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And, you know, I can really relate to him being, you know, a user, you know, and living off of other people's generosity in my past. You know, I always wanted someone else to take responsibility for me and provide for me. And I'm just so grateful for a program, you know, where I learned to be self-supporting and dependent on God to be my provider and not others. And, you know, he's the one who provided me with a career, you know, where I get to be of service to others and feel useful and needed. And, you know, I'm no longer in conflict and competition with my coworkers, you know, stepping on their toes, trying to get ahead and be recognized and favored. And I'm able to be a team player, you know, supportive of my coworkers, and I'm able to accept their role without envy, you know, and I'm able to look my employers in the eye, you know, and feel equal instead of less than. And, you know, recognizing God as my employer and all of us humans as just playing the role he assigned us. You know, not any better or any worse than each other, you know, but equal. And, you know, and I'm no longer resenting my husband, you know, for not being the sole provider. You know, God's enabled me to accept the lot I've been given, you know, as an equal, you know, where we each carry our own load and, you know, and doing it with gratitude, you know, that we have jobs and a home and we can live within our means and, you know, not be excessive or overindulgent in things that don't satisfy anyway, you know, and God's given us wisdom in our spending and, you know, and the piece at the end about being a hanger-oner, you know, I no longer need to insert myself where I'm not wanted or invited. You know, I don't need to try to wrest anything out of others that they don't want to give, you know, and I have to, you know, I've learned to accept their no, you know, and to be sensitive and respectful of the boundaries they set. And I'm just so grateful for the program. It's just, you know, a growing experience, you know, every day. And thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Wendy B. in Arizona. And Sherry H.M., it is your turn, followed by Janice K.
Good morning. This is Sherry H.M. from Washington State, and it's Sherry with a C. Wow, I could really relate to this with my food addiction. Recovered sugar addict and food addict for almost 8 years because I had all these medical problems. I have lupus and ankylosing spondylitis, and I was having about $13,000 to $16,000 per year out of pocket with medical bills. And then I thought, oh my God, there must be another way that I can just, you know, deal with all these problems. Let me think about another diet or whatever. And I remembered that 6 years before, my Al-Anon friends told me that they were in OA. And anyway, so I called one and we met for coffee. And that was almost 8 years ago. And she told me her experience, strength, and hope. She'd been in the program for many, many years and kept off 55 pounds. And of course, my ears were tingling, you know, stay, come for the vanity, stay for the sanity. Anyway, and then through all these miraculous steps, and thank you to God that, wow, I can't even believe I have the gift of food neutrality. And I'm able to, you know, think more about how does God want to use me and, you know, how can I be a blessing to other people? I'm not here. It's not, you know, all about Sherry, the Sherry show. So anyway, I'm so grateful for you guys and thank you. And I pass. Have a good day.
Thank you, Sherry H.M. in Washington. And good morning, Janice K. You are up followed by Sherry Z.
Hi, this is Janice Kay. Oh boy, part of the pain in reading this paragraph and part of the freedom is that I can see it from both sides. But this is only concerned with me as the addict. They went to live with his wife's parents. At the time, that was a shameful admission that he could not support his wife. And society at that time had that expectation, you will support your family. I was very dependent on that support, even though there was the popular move toward women having careers back in the 70s, I was okay with staying in the house because I could hide there and be taken care of. Mercifully, no one could guess that I was to have no real employment for 5 years. Well, for me, it was closer to 10 or 12. My wife began working in a department store. I mean, and when she came home exhausted to find him drunk. Well, that's a great thrill because not only did my then spouse have a tubby little wife at home, he got to pay for all the food and all the goodies that I consumed. I became an unwelcome hanger-on at brokerage places. Oh my goodness, the unending need to find a place to belong before program. It was terrible. And he sounds like he's hit bottom here. But the crazy thing is, it gets worse. He hasn't hit bottom yet. You don't hit bottom until you find the way out. When you start moving up, you realize it's the bottom. The hope in this paragraph is that our higher power gives power, okay? Not only to stop relying on food, but also he gives us the courage to do new things, to find new coping techniques. One of my early amends was telling the truth when the truth should be told. And every time I did, I had to grab courage from my higher power and open my mouth and speak. Program is indeed not just for people who want it, and it's not for people who need it. It is for people who do it. If you don't pick up the kit of spiritual tools, you can't move on. The good, the hope is also that we don't do it alone. We have other people. We have higher power. I am not who I want to be. I am not who I will be. I thank God I am not who I was. Thank you for listening, I pass.
Thank you, Janice K. in Oregon. And Sherry Z., you are up, followed by Katie V.
Good morning. This is Sherry Z., recovered in California. Thank you all for your service. So this paragraph reminded me of page 82, which says, the alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. And after I did my nine-step amends with my husband, my sponsor suggested that I read this tornado paragraph to my husband. And I thought my husband would say, well, you're not a tornado. I mean, come on. And my husband was like, yeah, that's what it was like. And I felt like that's what Bill's wife would have said to him had he been able in that moment to say, I'm a tornado. I'm roaring my way through life, and it's having a profound effect on you and others, and it's deadening relationships. And and at that moment, when I heard my husband say, yeah, that's what it's like, I was like incredibly sad that I had put him and our kids through that, and also incredibly hopeful that this is where I really relate to Bill, that, you know, I don't have to be like that anymore. And every day that I'm recovered, I don't have to be a tornado. What's challenging is sometimes I still behave badly and I have to fix things and I want it to be different. I want to never be a tornado again. But I remind myself, I'm not the tornado I once was. The tornado I once was with food and throwing out things. And now the tornado is, you know, just much smaller. I have a process of which to repair and amend and fix. And so I'm incredibly grateful. And I look forward to reading the next paragraph because one of my favorite lines is liquor ceased to be a luxury, it became a necessity. And that's one of my favorite lines in the whole book. But that's tomorrow, so you'll wait till then, along with me. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry Z in California. And Katie V, you're up, followed by Larry G. Go ahead, Katie.
Hi, good morning. This is Katie V in California. And this paragraph, wow,
yes.
it really hit me.
I have muted.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just keep doing my thing. This paragraph really.
Katie, we're not hearing you.
I'm
Can
sorry,
you press star one? Thank you.
Hello? Can I be heard?
Okay. Yes. Go ahead, Katie. Sorry.
Thanks. No problem. Not sure if anyone heard. So hi, I'm Katie. I'm a compulsive overeater in California. And this paragraph reminded me of all the pain and humiliation that I suffered in this disease that, you know, other people could see or maybe guess, but I I was just blind to it, you know. And thank you for the lead this morning, and also thank you for the share that talked about how, you know, this seemed like it was bottom, right? This seemed like it was bottom, but, and yet there are like five more pages, you know, of him just constantly hitting bottom. And that's what I did too. And listening to the share, you know, brought back this very visceral memory of, I was at this Manhattan bar in, you know, like 2, 3, 4 years ago. And I was drinking martinis like they were water, and I was ordering, you know, entree after entree, and just sitting at this bar, this really hip restaurant, is buzzing with people, and I think nobody can see me, right? Like I'm just doing my thing, and I've probably eaten, you know, 8 entrees at this point, and the manager comes out, and she says to me, I put in another order with the bartender, you know, for another entree. And the manager comes out and shows me my bill and says, you've eaten all of this. And I've racked up like a $300 bill. You've eaten all of this. You really want something else? And I was so humiliated that I just immediately closed my tab and left as soon as I could. And I was reminded of that so viscerally, you know, like I could not stop once I started, but I couldn't see it. I could not see it. And every single bottom that I ever hit where I said, that's the last time, I'm never going to do anything like this again, it was always met by a new bottom. Because until I came into this program and worked the steps with a sponsor who knew the big book backwards and forwards, nothing got better because I was not in the work. I was not doing the steps, and I was certainly not connected to a God, you know. And today, the only reason why I have even days of back-to-back abstinence, right? It's almost been 2 years. The only reason why I have that is because of a power greater than myself who intervened, who loves me, who wanted to save my life. But I had to hit bottom many, many times. It takes what it takes for every single one of us to get here. It is never too late, and God is always here and has my back and wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. And for me, that means being in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous with all of you. Thanks for letting me share.
And thank you, Katie V in California. And before I take you, Larry, just a reminder, we're on page 4, the third paragraph, and I'll be taking some more names after Larry. So good morning, Larry. Go right ahead.
Good morning, family. This is Larry G from California. My sponsor wanted me to share today. So we see Bill at the top of the curve, who is about to start his plunge into hell. And he admits later on that it gets worse to the point where he doesn't know if he's going to make it through the night. Yesterday was May 17th, 2020, obviously, and I'm in the kitchen helping my wife. She's a school principal. She's an extraordinary leader, and they're celebrating the teacher assistants. And so she's baking up, you know, 4 or 5 pounds of bacon, and I'm helping her. And I'm neutral. I neither want it or don't want it. And I suddenly realized that I said to her, I said, do you realize this is the first time since May of 2019 you've done this because of the pandemic? And when that day I was helping you in 2019, I must have ate a pound of bacon by myself. I thought, you know, that I was getting away with it. And she said, I always know when you're compulsively eating because your personality changes, right? Well, yesterday, I'm helping her, and I didn't even sniff the cork. And today, I celebrate 2 years of entire abstinence, and I'm baffled in how I got to this point. I know it's in the pages, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but how could that man who could not put the bacon down, who would have ate all 4 pounds if he had the opportunity, could help my wife yesterday? That same man could help my wife yesterday and not sniff the cork. I'm merely just floored where I am today. And if you're on this call, whether you need it or not, whether you think you need it or not, or you want it or not, or whether you can't stop eating, or you're coming on the call and you have a few days, you too can recover. We use the word recovery. A recovered mind is a compulsive eater who no longer is sniffing the cork, wants a bacon or not wants a bacon, and could be neutral in that situation. And you too can get there, but it's going to take a lot of work. And I really suggest getting off the sidelines. I got the sidelines very early. The person I called on Sunday night, I didn't have a clue that she was in a vision for you. I heard her speak at a conference, and I called her, and she suggested I get on this call the next day. And I've been on this call ever since. And all I've done is follow directions, sometimes willingly, sometimes not willingly. Sometimes with great, ease and grace, sometimes kicking and screaming. But it has happened for me, and it's a tedious process, but it's also a joyful process. Being in that kitchen, helping my wife give service without, acting like an alcoholic, sneaking drinks behind her back, was a moment of great pleasure. Anyway, I pass, and I thank all of you for 12-stepping me, and have a great sober day. Thank you. I'm out.
Thank you, Larry G. in California. Okay, I am ready for some more names. If you haven't shared in the last 3 days and you'd like to share on the third paragraph on page 4, I'm ready for your name.
Carol G. in Illinois.
Is that Carol G.?
Yes, it is. Thanks.
Okay. Anyone else?
Babylonia A.
Babylonia A.
Pamela E.
Patty M.
Pamela E. and Patty M. Now is your opportunity. Can take a couple more names. Otherwise, we'll stop here. Okay, so I have Carol G, Babylonia A, Pamela E, and Patty M. Go ahead, please, Carol G.
Hi, this is Carol G in Illinois. The thing about being a compulsive eater is that I was eating all the time before program, and the only way that I was really able to see how it affected my personality and other areas of my life was when I was abstinent for quite a long period of time and then had a slip. So even though if somebody has a slip, it seems like a disaster at the time, but it can be a learning experience. And when I did have a slip, my husband actually said to me, "If you talk to me in that tone again, I'm leaving the room." And I had no clue as to what he was talking about. I didn't realize that I was so miserable inside that other people could see it. And I didn't realize that I took it out on others with my tone and my testiness without me even realizing it. And this line it has here about... I found a job and lost it as a result of a brawl with a taxi driver. This disease affected my career a lot. I've had some dream jobs and some wonderful opportunities that higher power threw my way, and I blew it because I couldn't handle it. And one of them was actually being a stockbroker. Back in the 90s when everyone thought they were a genius, I thought, how can I play the market and get paid? So I actually took the Series 7 and became a stockbroker. And I was 40 and a diminutive little woman at 40, and I was working with all these 20-year-old, 6-foot-tall males. And the reason I bring this up is, who was the one that argued with the boss? Me. They called me the little bulldog. And, I blew it because I didn't get along with him. He was not a good manager, but everyone else seemed to be able to deal with it, but I couldn't. So I couldn't keep my mouth closed, and I would fight with him. And then we had layoffs, and I really said, please lay me off. And, they talk about not to have regrets for the past and don't wish to close the door on it. It's been very painful for me to have to look back on all these situations. And one would never even know that it was the food, because it's not even that obvious. It's how food changes one's personality. If you tell this to a normie, they will look at you like you're nuts. But I know there are people on this line right now that know what that feels like, what it looks like, and how it hurts us. So all I could say is I'm just so grateful for this program. I'm grateful to be able to talk like this with other people and to come clean with what I've done in the past. So I pass, and thanks for listening.
Thank you, Carol G. in Illinois. And Babylonia A., you are up, followed by Pamela E. Good morning, Babylonia.
Good morning. I just want to say that God is doing for me what I could not do for myself, because one of the promises that of the program that fear of other people will leave us has totally come true for me. When I was in my disease, I used to like be afraid of other people, and my lip would quiver and my knees would shake, and I didn't know what to say to people, and all I would think about was how awkward I looked and how I didn't know what to say to them, and I would go blank, and I just had so much anxiety. But now I feel free. I encourage other people. I love other people. And it's only been 5 months of abstinence, and I've already changed so much, and I know it's because of God. And God is literally my best friend, and he's doing things for me that I didn't know were possible. And so I'm just very grateful for the program, and I'm also very grateful for the 10th step, because it helps me keep a channel open between me and God. Thank you for letting me share.
And thank you, Babylonia A. And Pamela E., it's your turn, followed by Patty M. Go ahead, Pamela.
Okay, Pamela E., California. Thanks so much for being here. Let me take you guys off a speaker here. It's like, wow, I'm just looking at that paragraph again and just realizing that I have the thing about, oh, my gosh, I went and lived with my parents. I eloped when I was 17, lived with my mother, and then we went to his mother's, and yep, and it was like going from place to place. And I have, my family was historically alcoholic generations before, but that para-alcoholism still was present, and his family was active alcoholism. But the funny thing, and looking at all that, I could look at other people, places, things, and situations, but I couldn't see myself. So here it is, 40-something years later, here I am working. My mother dies last year. Guess what? I become emotionally dysregulated and can't be consistent in my hours. And, yeah, I'm still looking at other people, places, and things. And was in OA in 2012, a therapist kind of suggested that I come there and left it to go to another food eating program in 2020, because I was still emotionally dysregulated and blaming it on the program, not seeing my part. It's like, let me find the solution. It's outside of myself. It's somewhere else. So guess what? I get down to my goal weight in the other program. My emotions are out of control. Pick up the food. It's the program. No, it's me. Come back to OA. Guess what? Today is day one. Today is day one. I've been on the periphery for about a month, just trying to get back in that boat and knowing that God is the one, and your voices and this program and the big book and the vision and everything is all there. Today is day one. Tomorrow will be another day one, but it can be another day one of abstinence of that add up one day at a time. Yeah. Yeah, so I get to face the music and know whatever happened to me at my job was not because of other people, places, or things. It was because I was had emotional dysregulation. I was wanting people to, I don't know what I was wanting. It doesn't even matter, but I have a God, and my God is not Pamela E. in California. So thanks for being there. Happy to be absent this morning. Just finished my abstinent breakfast, knowing what I'm having for my lunch and dinner, and ready to take direction and ready to just to surrender and stop trying to be my own God. But thanks for being here. And I'll be back again to pick up, to be on the phone. So thanks so much. And reach out and touch. Take care and blessings. I pass.
Thank you, Pamela E. in California. And before we take Patty, we'll have time for a couple more names. We're on page 4, the third paragraph that begins with, "We went to live with my wife's parents." So go ahead, please, Patty M.
Hi, this is Patty M. I'm a compulsive overeater living in Naples, Florida. I liked this short little paragraph. It had a lot in it. I really identified with him just hanging around the house and drinking, and or hardly drew a sober breath. And I remember the times that I was in the food and I would completely isolate and nobody knew what I was doing. And it became such a sick little haven that I just didn't even want to reach out to anyone. And I just know that he was thinking that he just had to stop, but I couldn't stop. You know, I couldn't stop. And there was a part of me that didn't even want to stop. And that was terrifying. Well, thank God I'm in program again and I'm abstinent. And it's just a day at a time for me to do my disciplines and to make the phone calls and to do the things that I need to do on a daily basis to stay abstinent. So thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Patty M. in Florida. And I can take a couple more names on this third paragraph on page 4.
Caroline S. in North Carolina.
Caroline S.
Elaine.
Tracy B.
Okay, I think I heard Elaine before Stacy. Elaine, what was your first initial?
S.
Your last name?
Sam.
Okay, great. Arlene, okay, so let's
B,
take
California.
Okay, I think we're going to run out of time there, Arlene. So Caroline S. and Elaine S., I think that's all we're going to have time for. So go ahead, please, Caroline.
Hi, this is Caroline S. from North Carolina. And this particular passage in the big book takes me to remembering that I, too, didn't want to grow up, or I certainly wasn't taking on my responsibilities. It seemed like I was in certain ways, but I was resentful because I wanted to stay home with my children. But I'm a nurse by profession, and we can always get part-time jobs. And so I never minded that so much. But having to go to work full-time and then that type of thing where I just, you know, I would just sort of float through. If my parents needed to help us, they would help us financially. And that didn't even really upset me that much, you know, that we weren't able to stand on our own 2 feet until later, and then it really began to. But I see this with Bill, and I was the same type of person at that point. I was in my disease, and I didn't seem to know what I was doing for many years. Then later, fast forward, and I realized as the eating gets worse and I can't stop, and I finally get to a vision, and what a lifesaver. And like so many people have already said before, I can't believe God has done for me what I could not do for myself, but my higher power certainly has. And for that, I am so grateful today and so grateful in my abstinence. I just want to say thank you. And I'm so, it's life-saving to be in this fellowship. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Caroline S. in North Carolina. And go ahead, please, Elaine.
Hi, this is Elaine S. I'm recovered compulsive eater in Nashville, Tennessee. Grateful for the meeting today, and thank you for everyone who did service. This paragraph reminds me today that the disease will take me places that I never wanted to go or never envisioned myself being in the situations. And it just reminds me of the fatality of the disease and the progression of the disease. And I'm grateful for the reminder today because I've got a good forgetter, and I don't want to go back and repeat that. Thank you for letting me share. Again, Elaine S., Nashville, Tennessee.
Thank you, Elaine S. in Tennessee. And okay, so Arlene, if you're still there, we have time. And I think someone came in before Arlene. But Arlene, are you still there? Do you want to share? We have time. And if not, would anyone like to take?
Oh, this is Arlene. Can I share? Thank you.
Yes, please do. And your initial, Arlene?
Oh,
the initial of yours? B. Okay, great.
B
okay, go ahead,
boy.
Arlene. Thank you. Thank you.
Initially, somebody shared on this paragraph that it had to do with, I can't think of the word, but kind of self-embarrassment. And I think that, you know, when I'm in the food, I shut that down. But for me, I've had that kind of feeling about myself all of my life, of being ashamed of myself for whatever reason, my predicament. And, you know, I think that's part of the reason that I've eaten, which just added to the problem, because now, you know, that I'm embarrassed because of my weight. And, you know, I just have to realize that it's these underlying feelings that get to me, and that I've always felt different then. And I really believe that my disease was there long before I started putting food in my body. It was that different then, less than. And I think it's just important for me to accept and understand, you know, my life situation, and that just one day at a time, just that's all I can make the change, sometimes 1 minute at a time, and to focus on myself, even though I am focusing on outside issues, I need to focus on myself and my God, and that's what I'm doing today, and thank God I'm, you know, I've lost my husband, and I had broke my shoulder and had surgery all in the last 30 days. And I am grateful for what I have in my life, my program friends, my program support, and my higher power. And thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Arlene B., and sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Okay, we actually have about a minute. Would anyone like to take a minute? And if not,
this is Tricia D. from Georgia. I'd like to share for a minute.
Okay, go ahead, Tricia. Thanks.
Sure. This paragraph about Bill, and he, you notice, at least I notice when I read the paragraph, how he now living with his wife's parents. He is loses his job because of a brawl. And what I love about what Vision in the Big Book has taught me is that the problem is in our compulsive overeating is the buildup of emotions and life, the tragedies and things that life doesn't go on our script. But for us as an addict, our solution was the food. But the problem for us was the buildup of emotions. And I see that happening increasingly more and more with Bill, is the emotions build up. And he just keeps going back to the hit for him, the drink, and for us, for the food, which I did as well. And so I just am so, so grateful for Vision for You and then following the 12 steps in the Big Book, because it's made the biggest difference in my life. I've been in OA since 2010, but I've never heard the message that the problem is the buildup of emotions and the solution was the food. So thank you for letting me share, and everyone have a great day. And I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Tricia G. Or sorry, Tricia
D.
D in Georgia.
Tricia D. Yeah.
D in Georgia.
Yes. Thanks.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And sure. And thank you, everyone who shared this morning, and a special thanks to Team Wednesday. So we will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So Mary B., if you would please read a vision for you.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.